Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Christopher Burnham, Assistant Secretary and Chief Financial Officer of the U.S. Department of State. And joining us in our conversation is Kim Hinsman. Well, Chris, in the previous segments, we talked about the Bureau of Resource Management's five priorities. In this segment, let's talk about some of the management challenges the Bureau faces. Could you describe the human resources challenges you face as CFO?
The human resource challenge has focused primarily on the ever-increasing demands for accounting, bookkeeping, and oversight capability. One of the most important things anyone can do in the public sector or private sector, but particularly the public sector, is not get a government job and rest on your laurels. You have to continually take advantage of the training that's available to you. You have to go out there and seek the training. I think the very best people within the financial community within government are those who also then take night courses or go out to pursue college degrees or graduate degrees in these areas. I think it's absolutely essential. We obviously have benefited from the slowdown in the economy in 2000 and 2001, and then at post 9/11, and that there was certainly a recession going on, and we were able to attract people with strong financial and accounting resumes to come to work for us. When the economy really gets going again, we're going to fall back to what happens within government, is that you're competing with the private sector, and the private sector is always able to pay more. That said, we have more regular hours, the quality of life of the government, the benefits of the government. So we do have certain advantages in attracting people. Now, we've also had the additional management challenge in that we've been consolidating our efforts, not only here in Washington, D.C., but we had a very large office in Paris with 125 individuals over there. And we have consolidated most of that operation down to Charleston, South Carolina. So there is really quite a synergistic community now down in Charleston, where you have the DFAS, the Defense Accounting Agency. We're down there with most of my now Global Financial Services folks working down there. And that is also doing that consolidation while rolling out a single global financial platform has been, I think, the greatest management challenge so far within Resource Management Bureau.
In the earlier segments, you talked about some of the challenges about having a team deployed around the world, especially in hot spots, one might say. What challenges do you face balancing the immediate needs of, say, the department's operations in Iraq versus sort of addressing some of the longer-term issues?
Well, Iraq is difficult because not only are people operating in an environment where the security situation is a minute-to-minute issue. And while we all anticipate that that will improve dramatically after the elections in January, at least for the past few months, it's difficult. One of the ways we've dealt with that is, and by the way, it's not just applicable to Iraq, it's applicable to the rest of the world. We're looking for ways we can either bring those jobs back to the United States that we have overseas or regionalize them so we don't need as many people in countries, A, because it's expensive to keep an American abroad, but B, because in some of the places, not just Iraq, but many others, there are real security issues associated with Americans living and working there. And if we can regionalize them or bring those jobs back to the United States, we're going to do that. In Iraq, there's the added two added areas that are a real concern. One is the urgency of the situation requires that we do everything by yesterday. And that is not always conducive to a more slow and methodical application of financial oversight. Second thing is just the huge volume. $18.6 billion Iraqi Relief and Reconstruction Fund, and many, many others, the Development Fund for Iraq, which was the Iraqi oil money. I mean, all this stuff, we're not overseeing all of that, but we have a responsibility for overseeing a portion of that. And again, due to the security situation over there, how quickly we need to execute these programs to get the reconstruction going full bore over there for the Iraqi people. And then lastly, the sheer size of it has been a real challenge.
Well, Chris, switching gears a little bit from Iraq, one of today's hot topics in the financial management community is Sarbanes-Oxley. I know you mentioned it earlier. Could you expand a little more on your thoughts on that?
I'm one of those who comes from the private sector and is not offended by Sarbanes-Oxley. I think Sarbanes-Oxley was an absolutely important application of and focus on the kinds of internal controls, assurance statements, stewardship that we saw lacking in the Enrons of the world and in a slew of other lawsuits by the SEC and elsewhere against corporations that have either misstated their earnings, have to restate their earnings, or have to, you know, answer questions on, you know, why they use certain accounting techniques. So I think Sarbanes-Oxley has been an important improvement. I understand there's a cost to the private sector, and there's going to be a cost when we apply Sarbanes-Oxley-like applications to the federal government. But that's coming. If Congress doesn't mandate it, we certainly have to voluntarily do it. The most important, of course, being internal controls. It's one of the things that, you know, we do within the CFO Council, not only in my own best practices committee that I chair, but also with a specific group within the CFO Council that is now focused exclusively on what does Sarbanes-Oxley mean for federal financial managers. How can we take those pieces which are applicable to the federal government and begin to apply that so that we will be at the same level as the private sector in terms of the public's confidence in our numbers and in our reporting?
You mentioned the CFO Council. Can you tell us more about this group and what its objectives are?
It is a phenomenal group. It's led by the comptroller of OMB, Linda Springer, who brings all the chief financial officers of the major departments and agencies together once a month. And then there's an executive committee, which I'm thrilled to sit on, that meets a couple of weeks before the regular meeting. And we bring together all of us to talk about what's going on within the community, to get guidance from OMB, obviously, on their numerous edicts or circulars of different things that we have to do, from cash reconciliation to getting our audited financials and performance and accountability report to them by November 15th of this year. A little aside there, again, when we all got here with this administration, we weren't closing our books for weeks. We weren't reporting for months and months, really March 1st, February 28th, and February 1st. Finally, OMB, under Linda's leadership and the president's leadership, we've moved back to December 15th last year, and it's going to be November 15th this year. So in other words, we are holding government to the same standards as the private sector, and that's an important leadership aspect of the CFO Council. So when we get together, we talk about not only the struggle to meet these increasing requirements of OMB and the president, it's also a matter of meeting the requirements of improved financial performance of the PMA, as well as budget and performance integration. We're also working on those things as well as a council.
What are some ongoing initiatives at the department that have been the result of your findings on the CFO Council?
Again, going back to what we call GFMS, Global Financial Management System, when you require improved financial performance and then you require budget performance integration, you can't do this. You can't do the seeds of managerial cost accounting. You can't do the seeds of budget and performance integration or lay this, the foundation for that, until you have accurate and timely financial data. And so I think the number one result of the efforts that are being made within the CFO Council and OMB and the White House are that we have, A, laid the foundation by bringing in a global financial platform. B, we're now rolling that out on a direct connect basis, so we have second-to-second, minute-to-minute timely information. We've consolidated three legacy financial systems down to one. And by the way, we're terribly lucky in that, because I understand the Department of Defense has 1,000 legacy systems. I mean, can you imagine anything more difficult? Now IBM, GE, Coca-Cola, Sony, they've all faced the same issues that we've had. And in fact, we've gone out there and met, and as part of the CFO Council, reached out to industry to come in and tell us, you know, what are your lessons learned? What is your best practice? And we've met with companies like IBM and others to talk about that, because no one is really on the cutting edge here. We're really all in this together. Government, and particularly the State Department, though, is very lockstep. I think we're leading government, and I think we're leading the private sector as well in this initiative.
The CFO Act is now 14 years old. What has happened to financial management and government since the Act was passed, and what's needed in the future? We'll ask Chris Burnham of the State Department for his perspective when the Business of Government Hour returns.